What matters more, where you live or where you work? Surveys suggest that young Americans, the millennials who represent nearly half of the country's workforce, are moving towards cities as much for the social life and the sense of belonging as for work. They also place high value on community service. Sense of place and the power of place in our lives is the subject of the next hour of Midday. Our culture commentator Sherry Parks joins us, along with Catherine Laughlin. She studies placemaking and the human attachment to cities. We'll also meet Melanie Douglas, creator of an upcoming pop-up event that encourages people to express their love for Baltimore, why they live here, what makes them stay, at a laundromat. Power of Place on Midday after the news. And welcome back to Midday, our second hour. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. I recently heard the filmmaker and Baltimore native Barry Levinson say he hoped to make one more movie about Baltimore and the changes he saw in the city and its people as he was growing up here. Barry Levinson's four coming-of-age films, you know them, Diner, Tin Men, Avalon, Liberty Heights, reference the movement of his family and many others from the heart of the city to its margins and to its suburbs. Anyone who lived in Baltimore or the region during the last 30 to 50 years is familiar with what happened as the city's population fell. As people moved away from cities, the suburbs grew, and we spent less time on sidewalks and in coffee shops and more time in cars in our family rooms. A sociologist named Ray Oldenburg pointed this out back in the 1980s with a very interesting book called The Great Good Place, how since World War II, so many Americans had come to embrace a two-stop model of existence, moving primarily between home and workplace with little time for the third places in between, like barrooms and barbershops and park benches where people gathered informally or spontaneously. Those were the great good places Mr. Oldenburg was talking about. They provided a way for people to stay connected to friends and neighbors, to foster habits of public interaction, and to generally keep on top of things. And Ray Oldenburg was dreading the loss of more of those great good places, third places, even before the internet came to be. Now, I bring this up because this hour's conversation is about the power of place, having a sense of place, loving where you live. Surveys suggest that young Americans, the millennials who represent nearly half of the country's workforce now, are not so happy with that two-stop model of existence that was in this country and still is in this country for so many decades now. Younger people are moving towards cities, including Baltimore, as much for the social life and the sense of belonging as for work. They also place high value on community service, according to surveys. We're going to talk about the power of place in people's lives in this hour of the show. Sherry Parks is joining us. She joins us once a month to talk about American culture, how we live, what we think about, how we respond to the media, art, social trends. And today she wanted to talk about this idea of place, placemaking, the power of place, for a couple of reasons. Hi, Sherry. It's nice to have you back here.
Hi, nice to be here.
The one thing I'll mention in brief that you brought to my attention: an upcoming event related to love of place at a laundromat in Baltimore. This is going to be a cool event. It takes place in another week or so. We'll tell you about it. And this event caught Sherry's eye. The event's creator will join us in a few minutes. The event asks what we'd like to ask our listeners today in this hour. I think I have this right. Why do you stay in Baltimore? What brought you here? What keeps you here? What brings you back to Baltimore? Is love too strong a word for how you feel about the place or wherever you live? Maybe you fell out of love. To fall out of love with a place, you would have to have been in love in the first place. 410-662-8780. I think it's an interesting thing to think about, Sherry.
I think so, too. And it's a global phenomenon. Now, the majority of the world's population lives in and around cities. So, but also nationally, for Americans, it's 80.7% of us live in urban areas. And so people are leaving rural areas and suburban areas and moving to cities. Mm. And rural life is slowly dropping. It's also, for me, a personal issue. I mean, a lot of people are often thinking that I live near College Park, and I actually live up here.
Right.
And
you live closer to Baltimore.
Well, and it's kind of like an adoptive parent. I chose Baltimore. I moved away from another area in Maryland to Baltimore because I wanted a place that had a strong sense of itself and of history. I wanted a place that was real. There are a lot of newer areas that are any place and no place. And I mean, you could be anywhere. You could be in Atlanta, you could be in Charlotte. And mm-hmm. Maybe people are going to be upset with me by saying that. And so it's a personal issue for me to be in a place that has a sense of itself. So a lot of placemaking talks about people coming to love a city. I think Baltimore also has the challenge of maintaining its quirky personality and honoring the people who are already here.
And I think one of the things we ought to throw in there is this idea of younger people making the choice about where they live. It's not so much about a job as right. about where I'm going to live and what I'll be able to do there, what my life will be like there.
And actually, that's the reverse of what we used to think, that people will move for jobs. And,
oh, sure.
And millennials are now saying, no, I will pick the place where I will live, and then I will find a job.
As we were getting ready to do this show today, we got a tweet from the Downtown Partnership. The comment was, we hear this all the time. Research shows millennials choose where to live before they choose where to work. We hear this over and over from new downtown Baltimore mm-hmm. residents. Joining us for this conversation today also is Catherine Laughlin, North Carolina-based consultant whose research focuses specifically on placemaking and what drives human attachment to cities. So I thought we'd take a few minutes to talk to Catherine Laughlin about this, too, because she really studies it.
Yes.
Catherine Laughlin, I want to welcome you to the Midday Show in Baltimore.
It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
Sherry and I both caught a TEDx talk you did on this, and I was really interested in talking to you some more about it. When we talk about placemaking, I associate that with public spaces and community design, landscape architecture, or designing a place where people can gather as a way of building a stronger community. Is that what you mean by it, or does it go beyond that?
Well, I think that's a big part of it, but I believe in a holistic view when you think about place. And places are more than their destinations. It is about their identity. It is the sense of place and belonging that they create. And spaces can help encourage that or discourage that, but it's really in everything you think about when looking at a place, from how the neighborhoods are designed to how the downtown is designed, to the transportation systems, to the opportunities for positive social interaction in a place, and really how we treat each other within those spaces. So I'm a big believer, and the research pans out, that it can't just be about, well, what do we create? It's also what we do with each other once we get in those spaces. So placemaking really takes that systemic view, in my opinion, of creating loved places.
Loved places. Very interesting word, because do you actually say to people, you know, I love Baltimore. I hear just the opposite from some people who want, they're desperate to leave. But then you also hear a lot of passion expressed for why people love where they live, or not just Baltimore, some of the other smaller communities around the state as well. I've heard people express that. But, you know, when we talk about sense of place, there are some people who will take a job, move someplace, and time goes by, and they never have a sense of the place. And that, I mean, that's very true, isn't it?
Well, it really is. And, you know, the research that I was a part of and helped lead really looked at what is a sense of place? What makes people love where they live, and why does it matter? And we really found that it was three primary things that create that sense of place. It is the social offerings, so the opportunities for positive social interaction. It's about the aesthetics. You know, how do we create our spaces and still respect the green spaces? And openness. Do we feel like we belong there? And a lot of places, if you think about it, present those things quite well. I mean, Miami, Baltimore, a lot of big cities do that well. But they do it differently than a medium to small-sized city. And I believe that every city has a place in this conversation because it's how you show off those three things about your place that people will naturally feel attached to or not so much attached to. I mean, social offerings in Baltimore or Miami look a lot different than they do, for example, in Wichita or even Los Angeles or Santa Fe. And you will naturally be drawn to that manifestation, if you will, of those drivers. And that is what seems to create that bond to place that so many cities are looking for.
Oh, and as I mentioned, I'm a transplant, but I've always admired Baltimore's ability to hold its own between D.C. and Philadelphia. It's different from either of those spaces.
It sure is.
and I think its challenge will be to keep that over time.
Right.
And so I think this show is important because I think what we'll be doing is working to define what Baltimore is. Someone recently told me that if someone says that they love Baltimore, they see that as a description of the person, that a certain type of person comes to love Baltimore. And I think it's important to pull this out and label it and say what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, because we always say Baltimore's quirky, and I finally looked up quirky, and
that's one of the words we use.
The Urban Dictionary says weird in a good way.
Yeah.
I think it's
appropriate. That
describes Baltimore. So I think it's important. Catherine, I noticed in your background you were a social worker.
Yes.
And I think that's an interesting background to come to this conversation. Can you talk about social class and placemaking?
I can. And I think my background in that discipline, I have a master's and PhD in social work, and I use this degree in a very new way. But basically what's behind that thinking is the conversation around the person fitting with their environment. It's a basic tenet of a lot of social science and social work in particular. And so I have worked in cities all across the board. I have worked in cities where the population was literally 30 people, all the way up to very large cities, very wealthy cities, very economically disadvantaged cities. And what strikes me again and again is though the scale may be different, there is something about our dignity as humans that require us to live in a place where we can be proud of, where we feel like we are connected to other people, where we can look around and feel proud of the aesthetics, even if they are different, if they're on a different scale. They're meaningful to us. And so when we did this research, and the Knight Soul of the Community Project was very committed to making sure that we could make sure that this is across the board. I mean, is this really something you see in every class, every situation, every background? And interestingly, after we talked to 43,000 people across the country, even when you look at demographics, these basics about us as humans are the same. And I think as young people are really prioritizing place, we are allowed to let those feelings show. And so you see it happening in all kinds of neighborhoods, in all kinds of places, because the tenant is a human one. It's not a social class differentiator.
Catherine, I want to ask you about millennials. I brought that up earlier because I think this is an interesting trend, according to the surveys that you cite and the others that I've read. There's an estimated 80 million young Americans who belong to that generation, millennial generation, generally from 1980 to 2000 something, right? So anywhere from now 20 to 37 years old, something like that, I think.
Right.
Okay. And this is a big part of the American workforce. The estimates are by 2020, millennials will be nearly half of all workers in the United States. And we also know that millennials don't expect to stay in jobs forever. Maybe only 4 or 5 years at a time, bop around, one job, try another job, go with this startup, try another startup. That's not unusual anymore. So what's the connection to place if your job is changing that frequently, if you have a feeling of this the earth shifting underneath you every 4 to 5 years?
Well, what we, you know, a lot of times when I'm working with cities, I say we have to update our economic development playbook. The playbook that we have been using to this point is not totally wrong, but it certainly needs some updating. And this young talent demographic that you're speaking of is what's rewriting that playbook, because they are telling us, hey, you know, you're going to have a really hard time attaching me until I'm ready to settle down with a family. And even then, I might not stay in the same place forever. And what's important to understand from an economic perspective is that what's driving that decision more now than ever is their attachment to that place. And so place now gets a seat at the economic development table, where I think historically it's just the backdrop. It's just, you know, where we do our business. But in fact, it is an active player in people's lives now. And so young people, yes, they might move around, and they might move around a lot throughout their lives, but they will do it the most in their 20s. And they are frankly shopping for cities. I mean, it is, they're dating people and they're dating cities, and they're trying to figure out, you know, where do I feel like I have that connection? I've talked to a lot of young people who say, you know, I might move around a lot in my 20s, but then when I hit a certain age, or I get in a committed relationship, or I want to have a family, I probably will end up maybe in the place I grew up, or some other place, maybe the college town I grew up, that I went to school in. So their love of place is what's driving these economic choices, because young talent are the economic engines of cities a lot of times. And so we have to start paying attention to this new reality. And the young people and the young talent are really, like I said, rewriting that playbook for us.
It's very interesting. We're going to take a break here. Catherine, can you stay with us?
Sure can.
Excellent. Catherine Laughlin, a consultant based in North Carolina, who focuses on placemaking, her research is on what drives humans to become attached to a certain place, a certain city. And we'd like to hear from you in this hour of midday. If you're new to Baltimore, if you moved here, you grew up here, it doesn't matter. Can you say you actually love the place? Do you have a strong sense of place? Quirky is one word Sherry Parks has used. That many people have used to describe Baltimore. What else would you say about it? What if you were going to use the word love? I'm going to hear about love of place when we get back. What do you love about it? What gives you a sense of place and belonging in Baltimore or wherever you live? If you're listening to Midday today, 410-662-8780. A treat for our listeners. Before we go to the break, Carolyn calling from Chicago. To be our first caller on this subject today. So, Carolyn, I'm holding up the break just so we can hear from you.
Fabulous. Thank you, Dan. I love your show.
Are you in Chicago?
I'm in Chicago streaming right now.
Excellent,
yep.
Excellent.
So, born and bred in Baltimore, Maryland, and I'm studying here, so that's why I'm an older graduate student.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love Baltimore, and I want to describe love. Love is the ability to easily make friends. In Baltimore, there is a sense of community where you can make friends with ease. You walk into a place, you leave with two or three friends. The art scene, the music scene, everything is compact. Even though we are a city, you know, you'll always see the same faces.
It's a small town. It is.
Yeah, it's a small city.
Yeah.
Smalltimore, we joke. It's Smalltimore. So, you know, and I would argue that the drive to community service and the sense of place goes beyond millennials. I have my friends who are in their 30s and then some who are you know, into a lot of community service and community-based organizations, nonprofits. So it has everything for everyone, and I just adore it, and I miss it constantly.
Well, thank you for calling in, Carolyn. I'm glad you're listening in Chicago. Thank you very much. We'll take our break now on Midday, but please join us. Give us a ring, 410-662-8780. When we get back, Melanie Douglas will be joining us, creator of an upcoming pop-up event that encourages people to express their love of Baltimore, why they live here, what makes them stay, at a laundromat. And it's not far from WYPR. We'll tell you about that when we get back. Here's a tweet from Marissa, who says, just moved here from New York City 7 years. Just moved here.
That's just in Baltimore.
Seven years. MPLS 2 years before that. MPLS. Well, Minneapolis. Thank you very much. Originally from Maryland, and found I wanted those roots and community again. You can tweet us at Midday WYPR. Thank you for that, Marissa. Jennifer says, Baltimore is the greatest independent American city yet. Great service opportunities here. I'm a suburbanite by birth, urban achiever by choice. Quirky, yes. I'm a reverse suburbanite that loves Baltimore. Tell us why you love wherever you live. If it's Baltimore, it could be someplace else.
Notice she used the word independent city.
Yeah.
She sees
yeah.
it as being its own thing.
Yeah, separate. Its own thing.
Yeah.
410-662-8780. It's true.
Yeah. It's belonging to itself.
It's still unique.
It is.
Roderick's here with Sherry Parks. On the phone with us is Catherine Laughlin, who spends a lot of time talking about placemaking and the sense of place, power of place. And before I introduce our next guest, I just want to ask Catherine one other thing. Catherine, a lot of the work you do is for organizations, I don't know, like the Downtown Partnership in Baltimore, which is trying to come up with a marketing plan. Who do you work for when you consult?
Well, you know, I have clients all over the world, and it really depends on the place. Different champions come forward who say, you know, we are really the champion of this argument locally, and it can be the downtown associates, the downtown authority. It can be the mayor. Sometimes it is the president of the local university. Sometimes it's the chamber of commerce. Sometimes it's the CEO of the main industry in town. Sometimes it's residents themselves who are ready to have this kind of conversation with their leaders. So it really does depend, and I enjoy that, because when different systems are coming to the same conclusion about an idea, you know that there's some power behind it. So if I could have a CEO and a university president and a downtown authority and a local resident group all interested in having the same conversation, it really denotes something important that's shifting really in how we think about place.
I got to ask you this, though. It seems to me, and Sherry, you might want to comment on this, a place is an organic thing. It just kind of happens. Can you design a place? I guess you can design a place to be attractive to people. There are things you can do to make it attractive to outsiders to come in. But it seems to me that a lot of places that I like are just sort of there. They just sort of develop organically because of the people or because of some strange window, the way the light comes in, or, I don't know, the way a place smells, the way the trees move near it or something. I don't know. It's just something organic, the way it attracts you. You know what I'm saying?
Well, actually, yes, I do, because while we're having this conversation, simultaneously, I'm involved in a group that is redesigning Route 1, Baltimore Avenue, right in front of the University of Maryland, actually in conjunction with A.S. St. Gross, which is a Baltimore firm.
Yeah. So, what are they trying to do there?
Well, they're trying to create the look of a college town.
Because it never did, really.
Right, and so, I mean, you have to think, okay, what are the traditions that we preserve, and what are the things that you pull in, and you don't want it to look like every college town in the United States. But you're right that the best cities are organic. Baltimore is itself. It belongs to itself because it took centuries to make it that way.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean you can't make it better.
You can make it better.
You can. It could be more bike friendly, for instance. That attracts people to cities.
Well, and actually, the best cities are a combination of that very long history and that sense of self that is maintained. And I think that's Baltimore's challenge in the face of great change and making it better. We have to be honest. There are parts of Baltimore that nobody should live in.
Yeah.
And so, how do we make that better?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, how do you create a sense of place? You cannot. And doing the studies at College Park, because I mean, my Center for Synergy, where I work at the university, did that. People said, we don't want it to look like every other college town in America. Hmm. And the neighborhood said, but remember that we're here too. So how do you bring all of those pieces together to create a sense of
you
itself?
Have a charrette.
Well, and I think what's behind a lot of that conversation is that I see all the time that there's this push-pull on the ground in communities, where you have people saying, we have to become X, we have to optimize, we have to do better. And then you see another group saying, no, I don't like the sound of that. Because what's at the heart of that is a fear of a loss of place. And so what we have to do is understand what is the narrative of this particular area that we have to honor as we continue to move forward and optimize ourselves. It is a balance of looking backwards and looking forwards in how you do effective community practice around this issue. And once you tell people, hey, we get it, we get the part of this that we have to have central in how we do things, then you do see some unclenching But I think previously we've sort of plowed through things. Oh, we're going to do this now. We're going to make it like this. And a lot of spaces are saying, we like us the way we are. Well, I don't want to look like every other place. I like our competitive advantage. What do we do that nobody else does as good as we do? And let's optimize that. And that's at the heart of this work.
And Catherine, you just used the word narrative. And I think that's what's really important about what Baltimore has. It not only has a look and a feel and a smell, it has a story. And it knows its story and tells it over and over again.
Let's take a couple of calls here. Then we'll introduce our next guest, Clinton in Baltimore. Thanks for calling Midday.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead with your story, please.
Okay, well, I'm a military guy. I got stationed here at Fort Meade. But my wife and I, we decided to live in Baltimore, partly because my family name is Carol, and so we have roots here. But we really enjoyed the city when we were checking it out. We built a house here. My son was born here. We plan on returning here once I'm done with my career. But there's something that I was talking to the lady that answered the phone that I found kind of interesting, that at the Walters Museum, if you go to the Walters Museum, there's a painting in the Renaissance period area that's called The Ideal City. And what the ideal city has, when you stare at this painting, is it's got other things in it, but three main things. It's got, that represent what an ideal city should have. It's got the Colosseum, which represents sports and athletics and entertainment. It's got a baptistry that represents a religious foundation, spiritual foundation. And it also has a triumphal arch. Now, Baltimore, I've talked to my wife several times about this painting to the point to where she's gotten bored with the conversation. But the Baltimore has all of these things. Baltimore has many festivals that are church-based. I'm only going to say faith-based, but they're definitely church-based. You have the Italian festivals that happen. You've got Ukrainian festivals, the Latin festivals. Those are some that I go to, but there are also more that kind of encompass the fact that Baltimore has a faith-based, a community-based aspect to it that's very strong. Also including that it's the seat of the Catholic. Then you've got, of course, everybody knows this city bleeds orange in the summer and purple in the winter. So the athletic aspect of it is there, and both of those teams, at least right now, are doing very well. But it's also got more on the entertainment aspect. It's got theaters, it's got a symphony, it's got all of those things that make the entertainment and that venue also very important. And then if you were here this summer for the other aspect of it, the military history, you would know that Baltimore not only has a great military history, but its military history is one that not only shaped the city, but it shaped this country.
Hey, Clinton, Clinton, let me ask you something. Where did you move here from?
I moved here from Italy, actually.
Where did you grow up?
My family, we moved, at some point we moved from Maryland to Texas. So I grew up in Texas, but my family is actually from Baltimore.
Well, so you sound like you're happy to be here.
We enjoy it here. We do. I mean, I have to leave again. My wife and son are going to stay back. I have to go away for a little bit, but we built a house here and we enjoy it here. Everybody that we've met has been really great, and most people have been kind of little mini ambassadors for the city when it comes to everything, to talking about some of the more grittier aspects of the city, to teaching me how to actually open up crafts.
I was going to say, that's an interesting observation right there about people in Baltimore here who will tell you bad things, talk about rats and all that stuff, and then they want to make sure you have a good time,
mm-hmm.
that you eat in the right place. Right? Thank you, Clinton. I appreciate that story. Clinton really sounds like he's really into it.
Yeah.
I want to see that painting he was talking about at the Walters Art Museum. And speaking of art, now I have to introduce Milani Douglas, who is sort of the founder of this Feast of Conversation today. Milani, nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Milani is the founder of a museum in Baltimore. It's called the Family Museum, not the Family Museum.
The Family Arts Museum.
The Family Arts Museum,
yes.
Which is sort of a floating, happening museum, right?
Yes.
It's not really a physical place.
No.
So you're a graduate student at MICA.
Yes.
In curatorial practice.
Mm-hmm.
And you've established this museum. But the reason we have you on the show today is because Sherry was struck by this project you have going in a week called Love on the Line. It's a pop-up event at a laundromat on Maryland Avenue.
Yes.
Do I have this right?
You do.
You want people to show up, artists or whoever.
Anyone. I want anyone, and I want you to bring clothes to wash.
To wash.
Mm-hmm.
Hang out at the laundry.
Hang out. We're going to talk.
And what are we going to talk about?
We're going to share some stories about a Baltimore worth living for. Why do you live here? Why do you stay here? What keeps you coming back? And we have some artists that are presenting. We have Jahidi, and we also have Amachandra. They are going to be presenting their work and their songs that are inspired by living here. We have Baltimore Safiatu Edwards from Baltimore Girls. She's created this performance group, and they talk. These are women that talk about their stories of growing up and living and loving in Baltimore.
What gave you this idea? I mean, I like the setting. I know, Sherry, you do.
Yeah, I do.
The laundromat, right? Because
yeah.
You show up there, you got to do your laundry, and there's a person might want to have conversation with you. You have time to kill, so you
yes.
talk, right? So I understand that, but the love thing, where did the love of Baltimore thing come from? Why did you decide on that?
I am born and raised in Baltimore, and what makes...
And recently came back.
I came back within the past 2 years. I was in D.C. for over 10 years. Came back for a spell about 7 years ago. Went back to D.C., and then I'm back again. And what I realized about Baltimore that makes it stick to your bones is that it is really love. And love is layered, and Baltimore is layered. And it's the one thing that I think is missing sometimes from the conversation about when we talk about giving what we do inside of cities terms. It's about layered and our experiences with each other. And it's complex. It's not always about just being able to walk to all of your amenities. It's not just that.
It's not just about amenities.
No, yeah. You know, because if it's like sandpaper, if it needs to be a little bit gritty for you to stick and actually get something lifted, you know? And so if everything is smooth, it doesn't have that same kind of feeling. It's in the groove of things that people actually live. And Baltimore has that. It always has that. I grew up in a time, I remember when I was young, there was this place called Supreme Imperial, and it was like an underground hip-hop spot that somebody converted a warehouse. And this was like, you know, early 90s. And so Baltimore has always done this creative placemaking and making something out of nothing and doing these amazing things. If you go into the streets of East Baltimore, you have streets where there are no trees, not one tree on the block. But on the front, there are people that have created these beautiful gardens of pots and plants just overflowing. And that's a part of Baltimore's history.
At the laundromat on February 15th,
yes.
This is the Spin Cycle Laundromat at 2020 Maryland Avenue.
Yes.
So you mentioned some artists that you're going to have.
Yes.
So you've invited some artists in to perform, do their thing.
To perform and
share
their work.
But you really want people to show up and just...
Yeah, it's about sharing the story.
Answer those questions. Is love let's see. Why do you stay in Baltimore? What brought you here? What keeps you here? What brings you back to Baltimore?
Yes. Those are the artists are going to be facilitating the conversation through some of the work they're sharing. And between that, I'm encouraging people to tell that story. What keeps you here? What makes you want to leave?
Sherry?
I think often when we think about placemaking, we think we're just thinking about the space. And what's interesting about this project is that, of course, people live here. It's about being in the space. And often when we think about placemaking, we think about, you know, the Inner Harbor and places like that, which are very important parts of Baltimore. But a laundromat, and if you have your own washer, you might not think this, but I have horse blankets to wash. So I actually spend time in laundromats. And they are happy places. Families are moving around. They're helping each other fold laundry. They're laughing. They're talking. That is the texture, what Melanie called the groove of day-to-day life. And if you can love a laundromat, I mean, you can love almost any place.
It's one of those third places that the sociologist Ray Oldenburg was talking about. Bar rooms, barbershops, even a park bench. A laundromat is certainly one of those places. In the sense of place that we've been talking about here on the show, I guess that's what this is all about.
And I want to say a little bit why I chose the laundromat. I was looking at a project that happened in 1977 by Mother Art, and they did exhibitions in 5 laundromats in Los Angeles. And at first I was like, oh, this is interesting. I love the project, but I didn't think about it. But in doing my own, trying to get my own exhibition, I realized in working in galleries and museums, I really wasn't meeting people from the neighborhood. And so then when I went to the my dryer broke down, I go into the laundromat, and it's everything that Catherine was talking about. It's the social offering, it's the aesthetic, it's the openness. You can see inside, everybody's coming inside, the colors are bright, it smells good, it's warm, it's cozy.
You mean you can see inside
You can see inside the laundromat, because if you think about sometimes museums and galleries.
You can see inside the machines. You can see their clothes.
It's got the openness. But sometimes at a gallery, you can't see what's happening there, and it doesn't always feel welcoming. And I said, you know what? This is I'm going to figure out for people. I want to talk about this story, and I want it to happen here.
All right, Melanie. And we posted some information about the event February 15th at Spin City, down the street from WYPR. Why do you love Baltimore? If you do, why do you stay? What brought you here to begin with? What keeps you here? 410-662-8780. Do you think you have a good sense of place in your life, where you belong? Do you feel settled now? Or are you going to move on and try something else? Let's take another call before our next break. Nino in Baltimore. Nino, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I'm definitely a Baltimore native, and absolutely love Baltimore City. I've traveled a lot. I've been West Coast, I've been South, I've been North, and everywhere I go, people are like, "Oh, you're gonna want to stay? You're gonna want to move here?" And I don't. And I realize that little bit of grit, being in between all these other places, New York, Philly, D.C., you know, it's a great corridor to kind of get back and forth. One of my points, though, is that, you know, with Baltimore City, a lot of people from D.C. and a lot of my friends actually come up here. And I think it's because, you know, they're missing that a sense of community in D.C. Where you have all these people that are transplants.
Yeah.
You know, and they come up, and they love it here. They love spending time here. And I think one other thing, you know, for millennials, one reason why they're moving into the cities, and this is kind of a different thought process, but, you know, you have a lot of police officers now in the counties, on highways, who are cracking down on, you know, on drunk driving and people going out. And there's like a no tolerance level. So, you know, people are moving into cities where they're going to have fun, where they're going to go out, and they kind of want to be in that area. You know, they want to, you know, be where they work, you know, and get right from the bar.
You can walk home.
Yep.
Yep. Thank you, Nino. Thanks for adding that, too. A little bit of reality there, though. That's good.
That's real. Yeah.
And I make this decision every day because I commute back and forth. And when people ask me why, I tell them a story really quickly about when my daughter was little and we were at an Orioles game. And these two old men behind us were kind of flirting with her. And we stood up for a home run. And when we sat down, she had a nacho in her hand. And I let her eat it. In many other cities, I wouldn't have let her eat it.
And people in Baltimore, like, they gave her a nacho.
And when I looked around, when I looked back, they had their heads down in shame.
Baltimore, the nacho safe city.
Maybe
it is.
Yeah, and people in Baltimore said, "Of course you let her eat it." And people in D.C. said, "You let her eat it?"
One of my first assignments ever for the Baltimore Sun, I mean, how long ago was this? 1976, Jimmy Carter ran for president. It was election day, and the Baltimore Sun sent me over to Mimi DiPietro's neighborhood in the east side of town. He was a city councilman. And there was a guy on the corner named Freddie Grazzaplana, who was the walk-around boss. He made sure people came out to vote, right? And so I was doing a little story about what was going on in the neighborhood on election day. And he takes me to his house. And his wife made the biggest bowl of pasta I've ever seen. We had wine. Yeah. I almost couldn't do my work. So these people were feeding me my first day on the job. 410-662-8780. The Nacho Safe City, they'll take you home for pasta here. All right, a short break on Midday. Why do you love Baltimore if you love it? 410-662-8780. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'll go right to the phone lines. I got a couple of emails to read that are pretty interesting. And I want to thank Catherine Laughlin for being on the show again today, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And I just want to point out, just listening into all of this, how important this conversation is. It's not a touchy-feely thing. You can hear in the voices of the people that you're talking to and in the folks that are sending you social media that these choices have economic impact. And one of the biggest aha moments for our research was the fact that these feelings translate to economic benefits. Cities that have people that are more attached do better economically. And you could hear it when people say, well, I invite, you know, my friends want to come visit me here. I like spending time here. We built a house here. Those are economic impacts that come from love of place. And that's what makes this conversation so riveting to so many different kinds of people in a place. It's just not touchy-feely. It's real-world economics.
Catherine, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Catherine Laughlin, L-O-F-L-I-N. You can find information about her work on our Facebook page. Yeah, social media. I got some tweets here. Nicole says, I'm a Baltimore native but moved to D.C. for work. Dragged my boyfriend to the Sunday farmer's market and still listen to WYPR. Drove the boyfriend around the city during Christmas and working on him to consider buying into Baltimore as we consider starting a family. She said, Baltimore has heart that D.C. just doesn't and can't have. A couple interesting emails I got to read, but I want to go to the phone lines, too. What should I do here? What should I do? B in Pikesville. B, thanks for calling.
Hi. I lived for 83 years in Philadelphia and moved here 2 years ago. And I don't get out a hell of a lot, but when I get out to stores and all, people are so kind and so friendly and so helpful. I really, really appreciate it. I think the people in this area are very, very kind to old people.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I appreciate that. So we're talking about millennials, and there's B. Thank you very much, B. Appreciate that call. Donna in Bel Air, thanks for calling Midday.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thank you so much. I really enjoy your show.
Oh, thank you.
I don't live in Baltimore, however, your conversation feels like you're talking about Philadelphia, which is my hometown. And I left Boston 2 years ago because there was a pull. I knew I was supposed to be back in Philadelphia where I grew up. And I think for all the same reasons, it's much friendlier than Boston. It offers access to D.C., to Baltimore, to New York with a lot more ease. People are just really passionate about food, and they want to know, like they do in Baltimore, where you go to get the best cheesesteak, where you go to get the best meatball sandwich.
Yeah.
So I really, I'm enjoying all the calls. It sounds like you're talking about Philadelphia to me.
I can see that. I can see that. Why, having been to Philadelphia, mm-hmm. I can see the connection. Although it's a larger city, but still. It has a lot of what Baltimore has. A lot of
it has
neighborhoods
too.
Yeah.
They both have neighborhoods.
Let me read a couple of these. Where's the one about John Waters? Yeah, Pete in Waverly says, John Waters' suggestion for Baltimore's new city slogan is Baltimore, the last Bohemia. This is appropriate and fitting for the subject of your show today. As a generation, millennials seem to behave like Bohemians of old, oriented around arts, social gatherings, and the possibilities of the fringe rather than careers. Baltimore offers opportunities like those in spades. If you are involved in the arts, music, creative pursuits, and do something moderately interesting, you will quickly rise to the attention of others, gain exposure, and quickly be asked to take part in a multitude of projects. This community, the places they create together, and the city's vast affordability make the city really attractive to this generation. This is happening as the expense of other former bohemias, like Brooklyn and New York, pinch out anyone without a trust fund. Jenny and Charles, that's very good. Thank you very much, Pete. Jenny in Charles Village says, when I work on my row house, I feel a sense of higher purpose, that I am helping my neighborhood and the city, not just keeping up with the Joneses. Maybe I'm kidding myself. When I was a Hopkins student in the 90s, I remember taking a cab from BWI back to my strip mall hometown. I saw a blue-haired fellow on the sidewalk at North Avenue, and relief washed over me. I think that was my sense of belonging. Some guy with blue hair on North Avenue.
Yeah,
we have kids now, and a few years ago, we would have moved if we could have. Schools and crime and just wanting to be fair to our kids. However, for better or worse, we stayed. About half of our neighbors with kids have left. That's Baltimore too, says Jenny in Charles
and
Village.
And the challenge is how do you take care of those issues and keep your soul?
Yeah. Barb, let's take your call. Barb's in Baltimore. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi to all of you. Been born here, raised here, so is my husband. I was raised like a mile away from where we're living now. This is the house he was born in. The access to Baltimore and everything around it is wonderful. I mean, it's always a sense of pride and, yeah, this is going on today and this is going on tomorrow, and I love it, and we both love it. And that's it.
Yeah, thank you very much. We appreciate your call, Barb. Michelle says, I'm a baby boomer, and my first 27 years were spent in New York City. I thought I loved it. I couldn't conceive of living anywhere else. That is because I did not know anything else. Now I live in Columbia, Maryland, and I realize that while living in New York was exciting and stimulating, it was also stressful, fast-paced, and time-consuming. I love where I live now. I think it is a great place to raise kids. It is also beautiful and inviting. There are drawbacks. I find it harder to make friends, and my single friends tell me it's hard to find mates. Now, when my children are fully on their own, I may feel differently. Perhaps I may want more social interaction, perhaps more culture. I don't know. I think we make those decisions based on what is meaningful to us at different stages of our lives. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle. And Patrick's comment is, I'm originally from Maine, but attended Loyola University, Maryland, and now lead healthcare for the Homeless's Volunteer Program. Baltimore's institutions of higher education and a subculture of service appeal to me as a young social change maker.
So you're seeing college students come and stay.
And stay. This is a new thing because it wasn't so long ago we had stories in the newspaper and about how Baltimore wasn't retaining young people. And look at Melanie Douglas here, Sherry. She came back. Now, she came back. She started the Family Arts Museum, but she's the creator now of the first ever Love on the Line laundromat pop-up. How's that?
You did good. Stories of a Baltimore Worth Living For.
Of a Baltimore Worth Living For. This is Sunday, February 15th. So it's Valentine's weekend. You can come and express your love for Baltimore in whatever way you choose. There'll be some artists there. This is at the Spin Cycle Laundromat. Bring your laundry.
I'm bringing laundry.
It's 4 to 7 p.m.
4 to 7 p.m., yes.
On that Sunday. We got time for one more quick call. John, go right ahead. John, you have to make it short, please.
Hi, I'm originally from the Midwest, and I've lived here about 5 years. And I like how the city seems like a large, small town in ways. But one thing that I found that I dislike is it's very dirty, and the people don't really seem to care much for keeping it clean. I've seen more people just casually litter here than anywhere in my travels. And it's a little bit of a colder reception. People don't say hello to each other on the street until you get to know somebody. So those are a couple of things about the city that I wish people took a little more pride in keeping the natural areas clean.
Well, I agree with you there. Someone who's been here for 30-something years, I agree with you on that one. No question about it. But we got to keep working on that, right?
And that's the opportunity. And that's, I think, what other young millennials see here is that it's not just a place where you can come and just sit up. You can come and actually do something and roll up your sleeves get your hands in there. And it's a good opportunity for
an artistic way of getting the message out to people about littering their city.
Maybe and we'll talk about that on February 15th.
Okay.
At the laundry.
February 15th at Spin City, 2020 Maryland Avenue. Yes. Melanie Douglas, it's been nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck with your project there. Sherry, you going to the laundromat?
Yes, I am.
Oh, so you can meet Sherry Parks there, our American culture commentator, Sherry Parks, who joins us here once a month when she visits from College Park at the University of Maryland, where she's an associate dean. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for bringing us this idea. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed the show today. Come back tomorrow, midday Friday, a special look inside Walter Reed, where the former Walter Reed Army Medical Center with a woman who worked there as a physical therapist with soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. That'll be on our show tomorrow.
Midday Senior Producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer is Maureen Harvey. The Associate Producer is Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richmond, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Rogic's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.